May it please the court, for Quest Corporation, Larry McMillan, bar number 700109, and with me, David Driscoll, bar number 12246. The issue before the court today is the application of Colorado Statute 29-2-106.1 sub 5, which addresses the rights of a taxpayer on appeal of a municipal income tax, municipal sales tax assessment, where tax was paid but to the wrong jurisdiction. As part of the overall scheme for providing a uniform system for the appeal process, the legislature included a specific statutory process to resolve conflicts where the taxpayer has paid the tax but to the wrong jurisdiction. Thornton and North Glen have attempted to avoid the application of this statute by setting up a conflict with North Glen's statute of limitations. In 1985, the legislature enacted 29-2-106.1 to set uniform procedures for the review and resolution of municipal sales tax assessments. The Supreme Court has upheld that statute as a valid exercise of state preemptive authority. The claim in this case that the North Glen statute of limitation bars North Glen from paying over funds that would be due that it received and remitting those funds and transferring those funds to the city of Thornton is barred by its internal statute of limitations. And to this argument, I would have four objections or four responses. The first of all, the North Glen Code on 5-2-13 sub M addresses claims for recovery where a taxpayer or another city has identified that issue within the three-year period. We've seen some arguments that would stretch the obligation to transfer funds under the language of 106.1 as being one for either an assessment of tax against North Glen or a refund of tax. But the language in contrast 29-2-106 sub 6 expressly deals with forwarding erroneously received payments from one municipality to another. The words of the statute are that the municipality which received the incorrect payment shall forward such payment to the appropriate local government. There is no refund. There is also no discussion of claims for recovery. Second, North Glen and Thornton statutes of limitations must conform to the state statute of limitation for the assessment of and refund of Colorado sales and use tax. And this is established by CRS 29-2-106 sub 8. So in that sense, the Thornton and North Glen statute of limitations are not true local provisions, but rather statutes which must conform to state law. And I'm unaware of any state statute of limitations on the forwarding or transfer of funds from one municipality to another. Rather, this procedure was established under 29-2-106.1.
Counsel, you reference the fact that 29-2-106.1 was enacted in 1985, and also subsection 5 is silent on a limitations period. What should we make anything of the fact that 29-2-106.8 was enacted at the same time and does reference the use tax limitations period in the 39 series? Shouldn't we conclude that the legislature intended that they be construed together and harmoniously, thus applying a limit, effectively supplying a limitations period?
Well, let's back that up, and I agree. Yes, both provisions were enacted as part of the same House bill, so they were enacted together. But if you view the 3-year limitation as applying to a claim for recovery, then the provisions under 106.1 sub 5 and sub 6 would never come into play. Because let's consider, a city audits a taxpayer The assessment has to be issued within 3 years of the first payment. You have a period for conducting the audit. You then have to exhaust local remedies. So by the time the case gets to the executive director, there will be no period open for a claim for adjustment under sub 5 or transfer under 106.1 sub 5 or sub 6. The statute of limitations is on the issuance of the assessment by Thornton. And that assessment was timely issued in this case. So the question is, as that procedure comes up, as that assessment is reviewed, how the taxpayer is raising a defense, is authorized to raise a defense that I paid the tax, but I paid it to the wrong city. And within that appeal process, within that specific defense, sub 5 provides the specific defense, sub 6 provides the method for transferring the funds from the city that improperly received the monies to the city that is properly due the monies.
But why does it matter what you call the proceeding, whether it's a refund, a recovery, an assessment? Why does the name matter when, in effect, what you're trying to do is have one municipality, have funds transferred from one municipality to the other? Shouldn't North Glen also be entitled to say, after a period of time, we don't need to budget for contingent liabilities such as this one?
Okay. I think the other issue is in terms of the legislature viewed 106 sub 8 and 106.1 sub 5 and sub 6 as being harmonious, in that in 106.1 sub 5, the text expressly states these taxpayers need not file a claim for a refund in order to pursue the remedy provided by this subsection 5. And that is conclusive evidence that the defense is not a refund. It is an affirmative defense to the assessment. It's called.
But counsel, is that in the nature of a refund? I mean, as a consequence of the taxpayer instituting this action, if it's determined the taxpayer overpaid the wrong city, the taxpayer shall get a refund under subsection 6.
No. The taxpayer does not get a refund. Well, that's where I would agree with that. It does work as a refund, but again, if you're saying that these all came about as part of the same House bill, part of the same legislation, you have to construe those as operating together.
I agree, and I'm not sure how that's responsive to my question. It seems to me that what the legislature is doing is, rather than making the taxpayer separately file a request for a refund, you simply join the other municipality in the proceeding with an assessing municipality. And if the taxpayer proves what he intends to prove, and if he proves that he paid too much, he gets a refund, right? And he doesn't even have to ask for it separately.
Well, but again, that's only of the differential, and it's only triggered by the differential over what was paid to the incorrect municipality.
Right, but it's still a refund, correct?
Well, yes, it is. But then,
so
the
would that refund be subject to the statute of limitations for refunds?
No, but because again, the remedy is a remedy to an assessment, and what you're doing is simply following through that remedy within the appeal of the assessment process.
So you're saying the statute of limitations for refunds would not bar to the refund under that section. So similarly, what about the statute of limitations for collecting taxes from the taxpayer? Would that apply to subsection 6? For example, if the taxpayer had paid the money to the wrong municipality and paid too little, and so the correct city came after the taxpayer for the deficiency, do the statute of limitations apply to that collection?
If you're, again, in the, well, what I'm not sure mathematically that result applies. If the taxpayer underpaid the assessing city too much, if the taxpayer underpaid the assessing city, then the taxpayer still remains liable for that deficiency to the assessing city.
Even if this process came well after the statute of limitations for collecting taxes?
Well, no, because again, this only arises, this is not in, this only arises in defense to an assessment. And the assessment in this case was timely issued. The assessment by Thornton was timely issued.
Right, but hypothetically speaking, if Thornton had figured this out well after the statute of limitations had run and didn't get any extensions and assessed Quest anyway for this amount.
Well, then the initial proceeding is barred. But what we're talking about is once the initial proceeding is timely commenced, then this is a defense within that assessment proceeding.
Okay, thank you.
And if I may reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Yes, you may.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Gary Jacobson, City of Thornton, 014787. Quest's argument is basically a preemption argument. They've always taken the position that the statutes, the specific subsections 5 and 6 of the statute, allow Quest to assert an absolute defense to the assessment of Thornton in this case. There's two flaws in that reasoning. One of them is the Quest confuses the distinction between legal processes and legal procedures with legal rights and legal principles. The other flaw is there's really no conflict when you look at the application of North Glenn statute of limitations to this case. I'm going to address the former, and my colleague will address the latter. The statute itself does say that dispute resolution is a matter of statewide concern. The statute does, however, also state that the procedure set forth in the statutory scheme shall be applied uniformly. That kind of dictates the scope of what dispute resolution means in my reading of the statute. Case law kind of helps with that scope analysis. In Walgreens and MDC Holdings, those were both cases where the local ordinances were preempted because both of those cases dealt with process.
Counsel, sorry to interrupt, but I got to concede I'm having a lot of trouble figuring out why this issue of preemption is even relevant. As I understand it, the statutory periods are both 3 years. So what does your local ordinance get you in this case that the statute of limitations, the state statute of limitations, doesn't? So why should we care?
Well, only because Quest argued that there's a conflict between what the statute says in terms of subsection 5 and the application of the statute of limitations by North Glenn. I agree that the statute of limitations by North Glenn is determinative in this case, and I believe that the executive director and the district judge both recognize that in their analysis of the facts and the circumstances to the uniqueness of this case. The uniqueness being that the Quest asked for extensions over quite a long period of time in terms of the audit process. And specifically in 2002, on a prior audit, Thornton advised Quest, you've got this coding problem, and the coding problem is assigning, you know, the taxes to North Glenn, and that wasn't resolved until 2005. The assessment was going on, and the assessment didn't get issued until April of 2010. So we do believe that the statute, North Glenn statute of limitations, and by the way, the statute 29-2-106.1 contemplates, I think it's an intercity claim statute, it contemplates joining the parties that are involved so they don't have to file a refund claim.
Counsel, is there any other provision in the taxing statutory framework that might come into play here? And I'm just thinking that the root of the problem here was a mistake, and it was a mistake, you know, that Quest made. But is there something else within the taxing framework that tells us how we address mistakes and whether it makes a difference whether it's the taxing authority or the taxpayer that is the source of that mistake?
Well, you know, the statute joins other jurisdictions. That's why I look at it like an intercity claim statute. And in intercity claim statutes, and North Glenn has one, Thornton has one, these are traditionally handled with those kinds of either a refund claim or an intercity claim where when, you know, there's problems with the point of sale and, you know, where that should occur. That was a Leggett Platt case. They look at, you know, the facts and circumstances and decide how to fairly apportion the tax. I mean, we're a border with North Glenn for years, and we've had intercity issues with regard to, you know, pizza delivery and who taxes where and what jurisdiction. And those intercity claim statutes apply. So, again, I think to your point, the judge and the executive director both made a determination that if I look at the unique facts of this case, the fact that, you know, the payments were made between 2002 and 2005, and now we're just getting to the court, and I look at what the statute of limitations of North Glenn says, a three-year statute, just as the state statute is, and apply it, I think that's why they made their decision.
Counsel.
Yeah.
Statute of limitations is typically a defense to a particular kind of claim by a particular party. In this case, it would seem to me that the statute of limitations is a defense that North Glenn may assert vis-a-vis Thornton's attempt to get this transfer under the statute. But Thornton is using the statute of limitations as a bar to the defense asserted by the taxpayer. I'm not aware of any other cases ever doing that in any other context. What authority is there for applying a statute of limitations that would apply between two parties to a different party?
Well, I think the reason for that is the peculiarity of the way this statute, subsection 5 and 6, are fashioned. And we stipulated that Quest made the wrong payment to North Glenn. And then under subsection 6, when you have to calculate a deficiency, the statute seems to dictate that, you know, the jurisdiction that received the funds improperly has to remit them back to Thornton. But in this case, because of the statute of limitations, then Thornton's position is, well, if the statute applies, we're not necessarily using it as a defense other than to say that if it doesn't apply, then the executive director has to decide what the deficiency is.
What if the defense doesn't apply? What if the statute of limitations does not apply to the transfer of funds between North Glenn and Thornton?
Well, if there's no defense in terms of the allocation, it would be handled just like any other intercity claim. And if and Thornton would be paid by North Glenn. If the facts aligned correctly and if there was no statute of limitations, because that's what the adjustments for intercity claims are all about.
So bottom line is, if the statute of limitations didn't apply vis-a-vis North Glenn and Thornton, then we wouldn't be here because presumably Quest would have prevailed, or Quest would be entitled to prevail against Thornton.
Correct? Yeah, Thornton would be made whole.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Let me give you a hypothetical.
Okay.
The day before the three-year statute runs, Thornton sends a notice of deficiency to Quest. Okay, the day before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it expires the next day. 2 weeks later, administrative proceedings.
Right. Okay. The timing, I get it. The timing issue.
So the administrative proceedings happen. Quest is unsuccessful. Therefore, Quest decides to ask for a hearing before the executive director. Is it your position that under those circumstances, Quest would not be entitled to assert this statutory defense?
The statutory defense of the fact that
they paid the tax, just paid it to the wrong
jurisdiction. No, I think they could assert it, and I think that the issue in that case would be when they join the jurisdiction that, you know, received the tax, whether the timing issue arose.
Well, what's your position? When is an action commenced for purposes of the statute of limitations that you're seeking to apply here?
Well, if they're joined, I think it would relate back to the time of the assessment. And the problem here was the time of the assessment was so much later than when the taxes were actually paid that creates the problem.
All right, but that problem could have been avoided had Thornton gone to North Glenn, as it did with Quest, and gotten a tolling agreement to protect its rights. What's bothering me here is Thornton's rights here is the right to receive money, not from the taxpayer, because if the statute applies, but from North Glenn.
Right.
Okay, from North Glenn.
But by you're saying of statute, yes.
Effectively, Quest must had to have done something, who knows what, nobody's saying, to protect your client's right to collect from another city. I mean, that's what you're saying in effect.
Well, all I'm saying is Quest had to be diligent in terms of their...
Quest has no control. This is triggered by a notice of assessment by your client.
Except...
No control.
Except in 2002, we told them you're coding wrong.
That's right. And then you
and didn't
do
anything about it.
No, and you didn't do anything about it either.
But
for years, for 8 years. 8 years.
But what we did was we were in the process of the assessment, and Quest continually asks for extensions of the... So to do what you're suggesting, I think we'd have to have some clairvoyance and say, wait a second, we're getting the extensions and extensions and extensions. We better, as you suggested, go to North Glenn and say, look, North Glenn, are you willing to grant us an extension? And I don't think North Glenn would.
Well, then you have to make a call, it seems to me, whether to issue the assessment in a timely manner.
We have to issue the assessment based on the information we get from the taxpayer. And if the taxpayer isn't providing it, then we're in a position where we'd have to estimate. And I don't know how many times we've been in a situation where we did that, and the taxpayer said, you're estimating based on, you know, information that's not accurate, and we were sitting there waiting for them to bring that information to us. So we're kind of in a catch-22 in that kind of a situation.
No, you can always issue an estimated assessment.
Yes, and then we're subject to the argument that it's based on not sufficient
information. But then you've preserved your rights. You've protected your rights. You're timely. We don't have that issue. That's the call I'm talking about. That's the call you have to make, and you didn't make it.
Well, we didn't because we didn't have enough information from Quest, and they kept telling us, hold off, hold off. That's kind of where we were in that position.
Wasn't there an estimated assessment made, which was then revised based on information that Quest provided?
I'm not aware of one.
Okay. I thought that there were two different figures. Okay. Let me ask you this. In studying this issue, I'm wondering whether you consulted on the legislative history of 29-2-106.1 and 29-2-106, and I'm specifically thinking about subsection 8, and whether that gave you any indication of how these two sections are supposed to work. Do they work independently or do they work together?
Well, again, I think, as Larry said, they arose out of the same legislation, and our position is and still and with respect to this case is still that they do work in concert, but to the extent that there's a conflict, home rule takes precedence. Does that answer your question?
Not really, because I'm just wondering whether, although 106.1 sub 5,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't say one way or the other. It doesn't say a limitations period is applied. It doesn't say a limitations period doesn't apply. It just doesn't tell us one way or the other. But 106.8 does reference the general limitations period.
And we do have
sales tax and use.
And we do have a 3-year, just like the statute has a 3-year limitation period. And we think it would apply.
So it's your position that it applies, but you're not relying on anything specific in the legislative history for that argument?
Well, the legislative history says that it needs to apply. I mean, it was House Bill 1007 said, here's the statute of limitations that has to apply statewide. And our statute of limitation does. So it's the same.
Including to these inner city disputes.
Sure.
Well, but the question really is, applies to what? You're saying, in essence, it applies to the assertion of the defense under subsection 5. That's what you're saying. That's the effect.
Yeah, in this particular case, yes.
Okay.
Because I think it's a unique factual circumstance that gives rise
to
that.
It is. I think it is a pretty unique factual circumstance. But so I'm not mischaracterizing your argument. I mean, you're in a sense saying the statute of limitations, whether it's North Glenn's or the state statute, applies to the assertion of the defense.
Yeah.
All right, and I guess I just ask you, where in the text of any statute that we've looked at does it even remotely hint at that?
Well, I think it's just operation of the uniqueness of this subsection 5 and 6 that gives rise to that issue.
But I've never heard of a statute of limitations applying to a defense Never.
Well,
I mean,
case of first impression.
Maybe this is it, right? I don't know. It just strikes me as odd. Another thing that strikes me as odd here is you've got a tolling agreement.
Right, with Quest, yes.
Between Quest and Thornton. Okay. So you've got this tolling agreement. So Thornton, pursuant to this tolling agreement, protects its right to be able to assert a deficiency for past years. Okay, that's the purpose of this. So that the statute of limitations isn't deemed to have run. Okay, so it can go all the way back to 2000.
Right. Two. Yes, right. Yes,
okay.
That's right.
Without having to actually file a notice of deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So that's told. Your right is protected. And yet, because Quest agrees to the tolling, it loses its defense.
That was Quest's request to toll, not the city of Thornton. City of Thornton says, give me all the information you need to audit. If the taxpayer says, well, wait, I'm busy now, I can't get it to you, can we do a tolling? Yes, we can do a tolling.
Well, Quest is not doing anything it's obligated to do there. Okay, it's not Quest that really wants the tolling. It's being, you can,
don't can worry. I still?
Absolutely. Yes. Don't worry about the lines.
Okay, great. This is tough. I thought I was out of this.
No, this is tough stuff. So, so don't worry about the lines.
Okay.
So Quest doesn't have to do the tolling, obviously, neither does the city, but it is really the city that's being protected here. It's not Quest that's being protected by the tolling agreement.
Well, but the Quest is obligated under our code to provide information so that we can audit.
Oh, sure.
And
oh,
when
sure.
we go and ask for the information, if the taxpayer says, look, I can't get to it now, or, you know, I'll try to get it to you, but they don't, and they say, let's toll this, what can we do? We don't have the information. Again, it's back in that catch-22 we talked about earlier, where you'd be ending up issuing a estimated assessment based on less information that's available.
But that's a statutory remedy expressly provided for. You can do that. And it,
well,
and it
sure
happens.
You can, but then you're subject to the argument that we have been subject to on numerous occasions where it says, well, now you don't have enough specific information, so we're going to challenge that assessment. And then we get to DOR and they bring in more documentation.
Right.
So,
and you get the information and you sort it out.
We try to accommodate the taxpayer. We try to say, look, if you've got more information that you want to provide, okay, get it to us. If you can't get it to us and you want a toll, okay, but it's up to the taxpayers. We diligently pursue. If the taxpayer says we don't have enough information, we can't get it to you, if you want a toll, we toll. And it happened continually in this case and created the kind of unique situation where you pointed out, where you basically got a statute of limitations that acts in favor of Thornton.
All right, thank you, Counselor.
You bet.
Mr. McMillan, I think you have some more time.
I think the questioning has hit on the nub of Quest's case in this entire appeal, in that looking at 106 sub 8 coupled with 106.1 sub 5 and sub 6, both coming out of the same time, the General Assembly had to have contemplated that the defenses under 106.1 sub 5 would be available in the course of the appeal procedure. The intercity claims procedure that the cities have spoken of is available anytime outside of an assessment, as long as it's raised within the 3-year period. But we have read the provisions under 106.1 sub 5 as creating a special statutory procedure, and I would say that
Council,
yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you. I'm
yes.
Not quite sure I have a good handle on your position. I apologize. Are you saying that Northglenn's or Thornton's ability to collect Northglenn is not subject to a 3-year limitation, or it is?
I don't believe it is, Your Honor.
So you think that
I believe that
Thornton can collect from Northglenn?
I do believe they can. Again, Northglenn was timely joined in the proceeding before the executive director. Note that in the appeal process crafted by the legislature, there is no procedure to join Northglenn in the initial administrative review before Thornton. There just is no procedure there. The And again, tolling agreements are used between taxpayers and taxing authorities for the convenience of both.
But counsel, if we adopted your argument here, aren't we essentially penalizing Thornton for agreeing to these agreements such that they probably won't do so in the future to the taxpayers' detriment?
No, they should. No, they shouldn't. There's no reason. There's no reason. Again, when the assessment is issued, the taxpayer has all its defenses that this particular purchase was not used in Thornton. This particular purchase was exempt from tax. And this is simply a defense that we paid tax to the wrong jurisdiction. And again, in terms of fairness, I would come back, I believe the General Assembly weighed this in the language when they pointed out that under 5, the payment of the tax discharges the taxpayer from both the tax liability, the interest, and penalty. The waiver of penalty isn't conditioned upon good cause. The taxpayer is treated as having paid the tax at the time. And on the other side, North Glen has money that it has no legal right to have received in the first place, purely mistake of fact.
But that's also the case in the scenario where a refund is requested, but the statute of limitations for requesting a refund has expired.
Well, but again, there comes a point when this is a defense to, it's one thing to say, okay, I paid the tax, I shouldn't have, but it's another thing to say, wait a minute, I have to pay the tax twice. That's a defense here. It's not just the first time. And you're saying when you look at this and say,
do you happen to know? I know this is an old, relatively older statute, 1985. The subsection 5 and 6 that we're talking about here.
Yes.
Do you know what the procedure was before this legislation was enacted? Like in the same factual scenario or similar scenario where a taxpayer paid the wrong city and then learned about it at some point. What would happen? How did the taxpayer go about fixing this?
The House Bill 1007 was enacted because of procedural conflicts, and the various home rule cities said, "Well, you have to appeal it on this grounds. There's this statute of limitations. Oh, there's one statute of limitations for assessment. There's one for refunds." It was a total mess.
But was the gist of it that the taxpayer would have to pay the correct city and then go seek a refund from the wrong city?
Yes.
And so isn't this, and this statute, didn't the legislature just try to streamline this process by not having separate proceedings going on and having it all happen in one proceeding? But under that scenario, it's still, the legislature is still assuming that the correct city is going to get their money.
Well, I think, again, the legislature set forth a specific statutory procedure to get to that point. And all we're asking is that procedure be given force and effect in this case. And that the way the case has come up, what we're asking for is an order from this court that, based on the finding of the executive director, that Quest paid the tax to the city of North Glen, which should have gone to Thornton. And that tax was at least equal to what was owed to Thornton, that the assessment against Quest be vacated of tax, interest, and penalty, and the case remanded to the district court for the determination of the transfer payment from North Glen to Thornton.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case will stand submitted. We'll issue an opinion in due course because